Hi, Dave Emery here. Side two of For the Record program number 773, the Boston Marathon bombing, the third position, and the leaderless resistance strategy. This has been recorded on February 7th of the year 2014 against the background of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, that opened today, and threats against that Olympics event made by Chechen terrorists. We're taking a look at the Boston Marathon bombing executed allegedly by two brothers of Chechenian extraction, and both of them very possibly working as jihadists for an intelligence element, very possibly involving CIA or some element thereof, or perhaps ex-unquote CIA, an off-the-shelf operation overlapping intelligence services of various countries, such as the Safari Club Network, and in all probability, Saudi intelligence as well. Inside one, we took a look at the fact that Uncle Ruslan, the brother's uncle, and the fellow who was sort of their press secretary, had worked for the Agency for International Development, a frequent cover for intelligence activity. That was in the former Soviet Republic of Kazakhstan. And he was working there as an officer for a subsidiary of Halliburton Oil. We then looked at the fact that Uncle Ruslan was married to the daughter of Graham Fuller, a key CIA officer for many years, an individual who worked with jihadist elements around the world, was at one point, I believe, CIA station chief in Kabul, put a question mark by that, certainly deeply involved with the Afghan Mujahideen effort. And Graham Fuller also had used the mailing. His address was the mailing address for the Congress of Chechens International, founded by Uncle Ruslan, the uncle of the alleged bombers, Jokhar and Tamerlane Tsarnaev. We looked at the fact that the tutor of Jokhar Tsarnaev at the University of Massachusetts in Boston was a guy named Brian Glynn Williams, who himself had a CIA background working with jihadist elements and was something of an expert on Chechnyan and suicide bombers as well. We took a look at the fact that the mosque at which the alleged bombers worked, had a history of association with terror elements. It was founded by Abdurrahman Alamoudi, one of the people who figured in the investigation into the Operation Green Quest raids. And he was a protege, as we have seen, of Grover Norquist, arguably the most important figure on the GOP right wing. He also, that is to say, Grover Norquist and Alamoudi, also networked with Karl Rove, and recalled that after the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, the managing director of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Free Market Institute, Talat Otman, a former director of Harkin Energy, one of W's energy companies, and a fellow who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention and was a friend and political associate of both George's Bush, interceded directly with then Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on behalf of the individuals and institutions who were so targeted. And we're going to take a look now at the fact that Boston itself was an epicenter for Chechen jihadist elements, and we are going to take a look at the evolution, the organizational evolution of the primary Chechen jihadist organization in Boston, which evolved directly from some of the previous Islamic jihadist elements that have been used by U.S. and Western intelligence, such as the Afghan Mujahideen. We are going to see evidentiary tributaries running back in the milieu of the Afghan slash jihadist element implicated in the first World Trade Center attack. There are evidentiary tributaries running between that milieu and the World Trade Center attacks of September 11th as well. Following story is from Foreign Policy Magazine of April 22nd of 2013, an article by J as in John, M as in Mary Berger, capital B as in boy, E-R, G as in George, E-R. It's called Boston's Jihadist Past, and it reads in part, "When Boston Marathon runners rounded the bend from Beacon Street last week, they were in the home stretch of the race. As they poured through the closed intersection, they ran past a nondescript address, 510 Commonwealth Avenue. The location was once home to an international support network that raised funds and recruited fighters for a jihadist insurgency against Russian rule over Chechnya, a region, and a conflict that few of the runners had likely ever given any serious thought," skipping down. "But if the lead pans out, it won't be Boston's first brush with that faraway war. During the 1980s and into the 1990s, Islamist foreign fighters operated robust recruiting and financing networks that supported Chechen jihadists from the United States, and Boston was home to one of its most significant centers, a branch of the Al-Kifa Center based in Brooklyn, which would later be rechristened CARE International, that's C-A-R-E, not to be confused with the UN charity. Al-Kifa, by the way, capital A-L, capital K as in kangaroo, I, F as in Frank, A-H. Continuing, Al-Kifa sprang from the military jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan. Through the end of the occupation, a network of centers in the U.S. helped support the efforts of Afghan and Arab mujahideen, soliciting donations and recruiting fighters, including at least four from Boston who died in action, one of them a former Dunkin' Donuts employee. When the war ended, those networks did not disappear. They refocused on other activities. In Brooklyn, that network turned against the U.S. The center's leaders and many of its members helped facilitate the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and they actively planned and attempted to execute a subsequent plot that summer to blow up the Lincoln and Holland tunnels in New York, which would have killed thousands. When the FBI thwarted the tunnels plot, the Brooklyn Al-Kifa office and most of the other satellite locations were shuttered. But in Boston, the work continued under a new name and with a new focus, supporting foreign fighter efforts in Bosnia and Chechnya. Skipping down. Established in the early 1990s, the Boston branch had emerged from the World Trade Center investigation relatively unscathed. Little more than 2 weeks after the bombing, the head of the Boston office, Ahmad Muntasir, that's capital E, M as in Mary, A, D as in dog, last name capital M as in Mary, U, N as in Nancy, T as in Tom, A, double S as in Sam, E, R, beginning again. Little more than 2 weeks after the bombing, the head of the Boston office, Ahmad Muntasir, changed his operations name from Al-Kifa to CARE International, not to be confused with the legitimate charity of the same name. It took longer to build a case against CARE. In 2005, prosecutors in Boston went after the charity's directors using the Al Capone strategy. Muntasir and fellow Boston area CARE officials Samir Al-Monia and Muhammad Mubayid were charged with filing false tax returns and related crimes, having misrepresented their political and militant activity as relief for orphans and widows in order to obtain a nonprofit tax exemption. Those names, by the way, Samir, S-A-M-I-R, Al, capital A-L, last name capital M as in Mary, O-N-L-A, Samir Al-Monla, and Muhammad Mubayid, capital M-U-H-A-M-E-D, last name capital M-U-B-A-Y-Y-I-D. Remember, Mr. Mubayid and Mr. Muntasir were coming back to them. Continuing with the story, the strategy was not as successful as it was with Al Capone. The defendants were convicted but received minimal sentences after years of appeal and legal disputes. Muntasir and Al-Monda have since been released from prison and are living in the United States according to public records databases. Mubayid was deported after a short sentence and last reported to be living in Australia. In connection with the aforementioned Operation Green Quest raids, one of the names that we looked at was a fellow named Yaqub Mirza. Excuse me, last name M-I-R-Z-A. Mirza was the fellow who set up the various organizations that were arrested, that were busted on March 20th of 2002. He was never charged himself. Mirza was also a key director of a company called P-TECH. That's capital P-T-E-C-H. P-TECH is a software company that developed the threat assessment software architecture for the U.S. Air Force, NORAD, the Department of Energy, which oversees the nuclear power plants, and the Internal Revenue Service and FBI, among other institutions. P-TECH director Yaqub Mirza was described by other P-TECH employees as, quote, having an excellent relation with the FBI, unquote. That may have had something to do with the fact that despite the fact that Yaqub Mirza set up the organizations that were busted on March 20th, 2002, as part of the Operation Green Quest raids, he was never charged with a crime. Another factor that may have affected that was the fact that Yaqub Mirza also was business partners with one of the members of the Kaiser family. It may have been Nick Kaiser. I'm operating off the top of my head. But the fact that he was involved with a key finance operation with one of the Kaisers, a member of the Kaiser family, certainly didn't hurt. He was very well connected. Now, again, in terms of the anomalous performance of various elements on September 11th, 2001, bear in mind that there are inextricable links between the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda per se, elements involved with the first World Trade Center attack, including elements linked with Abdullah Azzam, who first recruited Osama bin Laden himself to the Muslim Brotherhood. It would be, I guess one could say, impossible to exaggerate the links between the Muslim Brotherhood, the milieu of Al-Qaeda, the milieu of the first World Trade Center attack, and P-TECH. Again, the company that developed the threat assessment software architecture for the Air Force, NORAD, the Department of Energy, and other critical federal agencies. And, well, certainly that did not help, to put it mildly, the performance of federal agencies on September 11th. Now, in talking about the Boston area Chechnyan jihadist funding organization called CARE, C-A-R-E, not to be confused with the U.N. agency of the same name. Remember the name Imad Muntasir, M-U-N-T-A-S-S-E-R, and Muhammad Mubayid, M-U-B-A-Y-Y-I-D. In connection with the aforementioned P-TECH, again, P as in Paul dash T-E-C-H, sometimes you'll see it, P-T-E-C-H with no hyphen. The following article is from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette of July 19th of 2009. It is headlined, U.S. says firm hid terrorist Saudi backer, Shrewsbury man worked at P-TECH. And that's by Lee, last name capital H-A-M-M-E-L, from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. It reads in part as follows. And again, these are some of the people who worked at P-TECH. He was convicted January 11, 2008 in U.S. District Court in Boston after the Justice Department alleged that he and two other officers of CARE International, both former Worcester residents, had illegally concealed from the government that the charity supported the worldwide holy war and the Mujahideen who fight it. Mr. Mubayad, 44, was sentenced to 11 months in prison and fined $1,000 on charges of concealing material facts from the government, obstructing the Internal Revenue Service, and three counts of filing a false tax return. Mr. Mubayad has since been deported to Australia, where he had previously lived, according to his lawyer, Michael C. Andrews of Boston, who said that Mr. Mubayad's appeal to the First Circuit Court of Appeals is pending. And skipping down still further, the U.S. attorney is appealing the decision of Judge F. Dennis Saylor, S-A-Y-L-O-R, the fourth, to reverse jury convictions of Mr. Mubayad's co-defendants, all of the charges against Samir al-Monla of Brookline, and some of the charges against Emadine Z. Muntasser, M-U-N-T-A-S-S-E-R, of Braintree, the two former Worcester residents who were former presidents of CARE International. Mr. Muntasser, a founder of CARE International, was sentenced to a year in prison and fined $10,000 for lying to an FBI agent. So some of the CARE people also overlap the milieu of PTEC to develop the threat assessment software architecture for the Air Force, NORAD, and so forth, a milieu that is inextricably linked with the Muslim Brotherhood, the milieu of Al-Qaeda, and other jihadist elements, and in turn, those same elements track right back to the milieu of Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, Talat Otman, and the Bush administration, among others. Interestingly, the Washington Post of April 24th of 2013, CIA sought to have Boston bombing suspect put on terrorist watch list by Greg Miller and Sari Horowitz. Due to the limitations of time, I'm not going to go into this. It is excerpted and linked in the description for the record program 773. The CIA had contacted the FBI to have the Tsarnaev brothers, to have Tamerlan Tsarnaev put on the terrorist watch list. One wonders why that did not happen. It may well be because of some of the intelligence-linked elements that we have looked at above. I also would note the following. It's a long story and occupied most of the first side of For the Record 710 from the late spring of 2010. From the Jihad Watch blog of April 12th of 2010, from Julia Gorin, more details on the Georgia-hosted Jihadi conference emerge, and it talks about the fact that, once again, elements of U.S. intelligence, those linked with the Saudis, the Safari Club milieu, basically, are once again using jihadist elements as proxy warriors, even as other elements of the U.S. intelligence and national security establishment are engaged in a very real conflict against them, not unlike World War II, where some corporate elements, including elements associated with the Bush family, basically were giving aid to the Axis as U.S. servicemen and women were fighting and dying. And another element that was deeply involved in the Chechen guerrillas is none other than the current chief of Saudi intelligence, Prince Bandar, the former Saudi ambassador to the U.S., and an individual so close to the Bush family that he is nicknamed Bandar Bush. The following is from Business Insider of August 27th of 2013. It's an article by Jeffrey Ingersoll. Report. The Saudis offered mafia-style protection, unquote, against terrorist attacks at Sochi Olympics, it reads in part. Buried inside the Daily Telegraph post about secret Russian and Saudi talks was a strange, passive-aggressive alleged quote from the Saudi head of intelligence about terrorist attacks at the Sochi Olympics in 2014. Prince Bandar pledged to safeguard Russia's naval base in Syria if the Assad regime is toppled. Skipping down. I can give you a guarantee to protect the Winter Olympics next year. The Chechen groups that threaten the security of the Games are controlled by us, unquote, he allegedly said. So again, Saudi control over some of these jihadist elements. And again, it looks very much like the Safari Club milieu that we talked about in, for the record, 522, and 524 is still in business. What we're going to look at next is the fact that somewhere along the line, perhaps as a result of a man from Boston with whom the Charnia brothers were associating, they had come in contact with American far-right and fascist literature, including white supremacist literature as well. In the two miscellaneous archive shows, we have spoken about the fascist third position. That is an element of the fascist political milieu that incorporates explicitly fascist elements with elements of the left and third world elements into what could be called an anti-US, anti-Western, and anti-Semitic milieu. It incorporates Islamists and traditional American and other Nazis and fascists, and it appears from some of the ideology that the Tsarnaev brothers were demonstrating that they had basically moved to something approximating a third position stance as a result of what they had come in contact with. The BBC of August 5th, 2013 has an article by Hillary Anderson with two S's. Tamerlane Tsarnaev had right-wing extremist literature, and it's skipping down. Tamerlane Tsarnaev subscribed to publications espousing white supremacy and government conspiracy theories, and skipping down. The program discovered that Tamerlane Tsarnaev possessed articles which argued that both the 9/11 and the 1995 Oklahoma City bombings were government conspiracies. Another in his possession was about the rape of our gun rights, unquote. Reading material he had about white supremacy commented that, quote, Hitler had a point, unquote. And again, note that Tamerlane Tsarnaev had come in contact with truther material. That is a general name applied to the disinformation that there was a controlled demolition of the World Trade Center, that the cruise missile hit the Pentagon, etc. It's sad because that disinformation has covered up some of the very real, concrete, and as we have seen here, well-documented links between the 9/11 attacks and elements of the Bush administration, the Republican Party, and allied elements of the intelligence community, who went untouched in part because of the truth or BS, and who once again reared up to bite the United States and the A blank blank on April 15th of last year. Another article from the Wall Street Journal of August 6th, 2013, an article by Alan Cullison, C-U-L-L-I-S-O-N, Boston bombing suspect was steeped in conspiracies by Alan Cullison. Skipping down. Mr. Tsarnaev's mother, Zubaydah Tsarnaev, had tried to make ends meet for her family by working as a home health aide after the family arrived in the U.S. in 2003. One of her clients in 2010 was Donald Larking of Newton, Massachusetts, who was disabled after he was shot in the face nearly 40 years ago in the robbery of a convenience store where he worked. Mr. Larking miraculously survived, but people close to the family said his faculties didn't. He was intrigued with far-flung conspiracies, they said. He subscribed to newspapers and journals that doubted the Holocaust and described the attacks of September 11th, Oklahoma City, and the Newtown School as plots by unseen elites and the U.S. and Israeli governments. The papers included the First Freedom, an Alabama-based newspaper that espouses equal whites for rights and whose website features a Confederate flag. Another was The Sovereign, A New York-based publication that alleges that the U.S. is under the sway of Israeli lobbyists and that Israel and the Department of Homeland Security were deeply involved in the Boston bombings. Neither paper returned the Quest for comment. Mr. Tsarnaev got his own subscription to American Free Press, a paper that the Southern Poverty Law Center said promotes anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. The American Free Press, by the way, is run by Willis Carto. It is the successor to the Spotlight magazine. There also was interest on the part of Tamerlane Tsarnaev in the Zeitgeist movie. That, too, is a right-wing conspiracy entity that, once again, although has some accurate information, tracks back to the international Jewish banking conspiracy, etc., etc. I noted the leaderless resistant strategy, the attacks by the Tsarnaev brothers, allegedly by the Tsarnaev brothers, took place on April 15th, which is tax day. Later that evening, just past midnight, so technically August or April 16th, there was an attack on a power substation in California. Wall Street Journal, February 4th of 2013, assault on California power station raises alarm on potential for terrorism, unquote, by Rebecca Smith. The article reads in part, and again note that this was just past midnight, but it occurred on April 15th, technically April 16th, the same day as the Boston Marathon bombing. Skipping down in the story, the attack was, quote, the most significant incident of domestic terrorism involving the power grid that has ever occurred, unquote, in the U.S., said John Wellinghoff, W-E-L-L-I-N-G-H-O-F-F, who was chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission at the time. Skipping down. This was not an incident where Billy Bob and Joe decided after a few brewskis to come in and shoot up a substation. Mark Johnson, retired vice president of transmission for PG&E, told the utility security conference, according to a video of his presentation. This was an event that was well thought out, well planned, and they targeted certain components, unquote. And skipping down again after discussion of how vulnerable the electrical grid is. Mr. Wellinghoff said an FERC analysis found that if a surprisingly small number of U.S. substations were knocked out at once, that could destabilize the system enough to cause a blackout that could encompass most of the United States. Skipping down. Mr. Wellinghoff, then chairman of FERC, said that after he heard about the scope of the attack, he flew to California, bringing with him experts from the U.S. Navy's Dahlgren Surface Warfare Center in Virginia, which trains Navy SEALs. After walking the site with PG&E officials and FBI agents, Mr. Wellinghoff said the military experts told him it looked like a professional job. In addition to fingerprint-free shell casings, they pointed out small piles of rocks, which they said could have been left by an advanced scout to tell the attackers where to get the best shots. They said it was a targeting package just like they would put together for an attack, Mr. Wellinghoff said. So again, leaderless resistance. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 773, the Boston Marathon bombing, the third position, and the leaderless resistance strategy. This has been recorded on February 7th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.